Memorial services are planned for today in the Ashland area for Talesian Murden Namkai Meche. He's the young man, just 23, who died in a double murder on a light rail train in Portland 2 weeks ago, trying to get between an apparent racist and the target of his hatred. The other murder victim, Ricky Best, was buried this week in the Portland area with military honors. A third man is recovering from being slashed. The murder suspect is being arraigned today. The incident happened a few weeks after we first met Rabbi Deborah Kolodny. She gave us a preview of a workshop on interrupting racism she gave in the Rogue Valley in early May. And she's the first person we thought of talking to when we heard of the Max murders. Rabbi Kolodny works through Resolution Northwest in Portland. She joins us again today. Rabbi Deborah, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Back up a bit more in time than you might have expected. How big a crowd did you get for that training in Medford last month?
Yeah, we had both in Medford and Ashford over 100 people. I think total maybe 240 people attended both events.
And how does that square with any expectations you might have had about the kind of crowd you'd draw?
I think it was remarkable, and the first room was at capacity, and the second room was close. So clearly this is a topic that is touching people's hearts, and people want to show up in the best way possible.
I remember from our earlier discussion, it was just a month ago, you saying that the approach is to talk to the targets of the hate speech, you know, ask things like, would they like to leave with you? Can you lay out the procedure for us?
Yeah. It is very important to center the target because you need to know what their comfort level is. In a closed space like a Max car, really the most effective thing to do would be to sit next to somebody, say to them, I'm really uncomfortable. How about we get off at the next stop? I'm from New York, where you can walk in between subway cars while the train is moving. I'm actually not sure how the Max works. Walking into another car is also a good idea, but really not to address the aggressor.
Not to speak directly to the person who is spewing hate speech?
Yeah. But I do not, by saying that, I do not in any way want to suggest that what Ricky Best and Taliesin Namkai Meche did and, you know, Micah David Cole Fletcher did was in any way inappropriate. I wasn't there. I don't know, you know, what was happening. There's a few different stories about how things unfolded.
Right. And I want to be clear. I didn't ask you on for a critique of what happened there. I just want to sort of explore your reaction to it. And for the rest of us, if we get in that kind of a situation, what kinds of things we might consider. So let's get to the reaction part of this. I mean, I'm going to just imagine in the kind of work you're in, this is like the worst possible thing that could potentially happen.
Oh, it's horrifying, you know. But whether you're in this work or not, I think the first task for all of us, the family and the community, is to honor and mourn the courageous men who died trying to protect these two young women, and to listen carefully to the other witnesses, including the survivor, Micah David Cole Fletcher, who was also injured, who's now out of the hospital, and also to care for and tend to the needs of the targets, the two young women, Destiny Hudson and her 16-year-old Destiny Hudson, her 17-year-old Muslim friend who was wearing a hijab, you know, find out what their needs are. And frankly, the other witnesses as well, tend to the trauma that they experienced and tend to the healing that needs to happen. So, you know, those are, I think, our first order of priority. And I also really believe that it's not just about individuals stepping up. We need to recognize that we have a domestic terrorism problem, that people who instigate, who incite violent hate in this country have to be treated the same way, treated, investigated, surveilled, and preempted from their intentions, just as we would surveil and investigate and seek to stop any other terrorist. So there's, you know, the very, very personal work that needs to be done. There's the societal and institutional work that needs to be done. And only when those things are happening, right, does it make sense to talk about trying to intervene, because hopefully the incidents will be rare and far between if those we hire to protect us are doing their job.
That would be the hope. Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange from Resolutions Northwest in Portland. She gives workshops, or action shops, as she calls them, on interrupting racism. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I wonder what kinds of things, Rabbi Deborah, you think might work in terms of interrupting domestic terrorism, as you put it, because I can draw some comparisons with the situation in London with the London Bridge attacks over this past weekend, where as stories come out about the people who were believed to be responsible, the questions arise, it seemed like, about, well, you know, the police knew about these people, but what could they have done? I mean, and I guess that's the large question for police anywhere, is even if you know of people and their activities, and the activities of the Jeremy Joseph Christian in Portland were well known and well documented on video, how far can you go in preventing things in any sort of administrative or police way?
Yeah. So I must say, even though I went to law school 1,000 years ago, I'm not an expert on what the criminal justice system can do. But, you know, we have mechanisms in this country, in our justice systems, for doing deep investigation on threats to our society, and, you know, that's the work of the FBI and the CIA, right? So I think that what we need to do is learn from the kinds of investigatory mechanisms that we already have in place to really shine a light on, as you say, these folks who are known to want to engage in violent acts. The social media has given us all the clues we need. You know, in this gentleman's case, I think we knew clearly where he lived and what he was about. He was engaging in inciting activities on social media and in the streets. I think we need to get clear on kind of what where the line is on when you can what can be done to prevent this. I'm no expert on that. I encourage you to bring an expert in.
Okay, that sounds fair. But I guess it gets down to the difference between if you're talking to a crowd of people and saying you should be doing this versus getting right in the face of people who you disagree with and yelling horrible things at them. There is a line there, isn't there?
Well, you know, the doctrine around speech, around free speech, is the favorite line is, or the, you know, the classic line is, you're not allowed to shout fire in a crowded theater, right? So when you say something that puts others at risk for harm, that's where the line is. And there's hate crime doctrine. We have hate crime legislation, which says that when you engage in activity that's targeting an individual because of their race or gender or sexual orientation, etc., the penalties for the act go up, you know, so that we have precedent in this country for analyzing these behaviors, for assessing harm, for assessing punishment, that I think need to be brought to bear to this basic kind of street violence that we're seeing.
Given the apparent volatility of the murder suspect on that train on that Friday, I mean, do you think anything might have produced a different outcome?
Hard to say again. Like, I cannot, what is it called, Monday morning quarterback?
Right, yeah.
I do know that the MAX trains have emergency buttons that you can press that alert the driver to an emergency. Certainly, if you're on a MAX train or some other public transit that has some kind of emergency communication mechanism, you should push that. And again, just leaving, getting away, and doing so in a way that's... The goal is not to incite. I'm a Tai Chi practitioner, you know, a martial artist. The goal is to is not to confront, to push, because the idea is that when you push back, when you push on something, you create resistance. It pushes back on you. So the idea is to really destabilize, and to do that by either through distraction or remove, you know, just walking away.
To change the circumstances, basically.
Yes, change the circumstances, exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people, obviously, around the country, floored by the news of the double murder and the slashing of Micah Fletcher and all that went with that. I mean, how do people get up off the floor after something like this and still, A, believe that they can do some good, and B, be brave enough to step into a tough situation?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a clergy person, so for me, community and ritual and practice, whether it's spiritual practice or, you know, your workout to to help move move the grief through, to experience the grief fully, to experience the horror fully, to give it its due, to connect with people who are support systems for you so that you can regain your equilibrium is critical. That first step is critical. We can't just walk, if we continue to walk around in traumatized states, in states where we're, our PTSD is right on the surface, we are going to be reactive. And who knows what, you know, what will come of that. So kind of reducing the collective trauma is critical. And, you know, when I teach these workshops, I let people know there's no guarantee. You know, the literature is clear that centering the target is the way to go, but you don't ever know what's going to happen. There is risk. There is risk. And everybody needs to evaluate that for themselves. So I don't advocate, you know, or suggest that anyone should do anything that their spidey sense is telling them not to do.
All right. Yeah. So if something inside you is screaming, get away, mm-hmm. listen to that screaming.
Yeah. And try and take the target with you.
Yeah. To make sure that they're no longer targeted, or at least not in the proximity of the person who's trying to target them.
Yeah. So the best case scenario is if you're in a public sphere, you know, if you're not in a closed situation like a bus or a MAX train, really just get away and gather allies. So, you know, whisper in the ears of the people around you, let's get out of here, let's get out of here, let's see if we can, you know, get these young women with us.
Yeah, make new friends on the spot.
Yeah.
We're talking to Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, who gives workshops in interrupting racism. She's working with Resolutions Northwest in Portland, and obviously the context here is that we talked to her a month ago about a workshop that was then future tense in the Rogue Valley, a couple of workshops, and obviously since that time, the attacks on the MAX train in Portland involving hate speech directed to two young women, three men who got in the way, two of whom died, slashed in the neck, the other one slashed in the neck, managed to live. You can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts about the incident and how we move forward from here. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, if you're on a MAX train in Portland, you can't move directly from one car to another.
Mm-hmm.
You might find yourself on the platform with your hate speech maker alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's,
or we're in the car of the MAX train, you're saying.
If you're in the car and you leave the car at the next station, you might find yourself on the platform of that station by yourself with the person who's been yelling at you.
Yeah, so that my recommend. Thank you for clarifying what's possible on the MAX train. Yeah, my recommendation is for those who want to be supportive of the target to go with them, with the target, so that the target is never on the platform alone. Once you're on the platform, you can get out of the platform. You could run in. You could go into the street. You know, there's a way. There's escape. In the car, there's none.
All right. I noticed a special note went up on the Resolutions Northwest website from the trainers referencing the situation. What basically was the gist of it?
Yeah, well, we wanted to let people know that we are available not only for the kind of trainings we provide, but we also have a large restorative justice department, and we are available to help people dialogue in circles to explore their experience of this event and find meaning and find healing and figure out what their next steps are. Restorative circles, dialogues, yeah.
So many people must have so many things to say, obviously, after something like this, particularly as you get closer to the epicenter of it, and you're right there in Portland. Has it pretty much been something people have talked about nonstop for the last 2 weeks?
I think, yes, it has been, and as you may have heard, there was a white supremacist rally on Sunday, just a few days ago, and what happened was the community, the city responded in great force to have counter demonstrations. There were at least three different counter demonstrations. One was labor union organized, one was organized by a consortium, a coalition of over 70 community-based organizations, and the third was Antifa, the anti-fascist collective. And we outnumbered the white supremacists by an order of magnitude. I think there are different reports, somewhere between 200 and 500 of them were there. And I think the numbers I'm hearing from the three rallies were, the counter rallies were something like 4,000 or 5,000. So we are coming, we're not only talking, we're organizing to say, not in our city, this is not who we are, we're not going to accept this. We're organized around love. And, yeah.
There are a couple different responses, Rabbi Deborah, though. I noticed that Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler had asked for the permits to be pulled, for the rally to be canceled. One of them was on federal property, and the Fed said, no, we gave the permit, it stays. And then I saw other suggestions in response to Wheeler's that that the best thing to do would be just to not show up, give these people no audience whatsoever. I wonder what value you might see in suggesting that the way to deal with people who carry hateful ideas is just to ignore them when they gather for rallies.
I think it's impossible to know what exactly the right strategy is. but that being so, I guess what I'm saying is I don't want to, I'm not disagreeing with the folks who say stay home. I chose to show up, and I chose to show up because I feel that showing commitment and courage in the face of hate is critical as a Jewish leader who has in my ancestry and in my bones the experience of Nazi Germany, where Hitler was able to activate hate in that country to dire and lethal and humongous proportions. The call of never again rings in my bones. And so, you know, I have an experience in my heritage of not standing up to hate creates millions of deaths. So for me, showing up is necessary. And we have no evidence that ignoring the rising tide of hate in this country is making it shrink. We don't have evidence of that. There were those who say don't show up because there might be violence and we don't want any more violence, and I really honor that point of view.
Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, works with Resolutions Northwest in Portland. One of her things is she gives workshops, action shops, as she calls them, in interrupting racism. So one of the first people we wanted to talk to after the events on the MAX train in Portland not quite 2 weeks ago. You can join our conversation on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. In the workshops you give, you there's a major point here that this is not about training in self-defense or in nonviolent resistance. How do you characterize it?
Yeah. I guess we characterize it as, first of all, helping people understand what inhibits them from showing up, from trying to help, understanding their own, if they want to override that inhibition, what resources and tools they have to override and intervene, and then give them some just basic skills on what the literature and what experience tells us is effective. So I guess I'm just describing what we do as opposed to an overarching value about what it is. For me, I have to say I come from New York City, and I have always been inspired by the Guardian Angels, the group of peaceful vigilantes that Curtis Sliwa founded. It's still operating.
With the Red Berets and everything, yeah.
That's exactly right. That would walk the streets of the city and intervene, you know, to support people who are targets or victims. And I just, that captured my imagination from my youth, and it just seems to me that as hate amplifies in this country, it's a time to, you know, bring that back. Yeah. I also want to say that these workshops we call Interrupting Hate in Public Spaces. Resolutions Northwest also does Interrupting Racism workshops, but, you know, hate can be about sexism, it can be about Islamophobia, it can be about homophobia. So just to be clear that these workshops are really about addressing hate speech, hate violence in all forms.
Against whomever, so it's not just a racial-based thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. You know, we were talking about Nazi Germany in for some context here, and I wonder how much of the current climate you do connect to the current political leaders.
I think that connection is obvious. I think what's happened is that the rhetoric of the current administration, which started in the campaign, gave permission and inspiration and invitation to hate speech and to hate violence. And there has, since the election, there has been nothing, I think, or barely any effort to mitigate that. So, and given the selections of certain players in the current administration in terms of their ties to white supremacist organizations, that has given even more sucker support and inspiration. So I think there's a definite connection.
The ways in which a statement tends to lead to response leads to further response, leads to response to that response, and so forth, it seems to be a never-ending cycle. And in my mind at this moment in particular is the listing for the job opening for a new police chief in Portland, and Mayor Wheeler included in that, that the department has a history of institutional racism, which really caught, particularly the police union was outspoken about that. I wonder if we're still looking for lines between bald-faced honesty and some sense of restoring justice.
I'm not sure what the question is in there. So let me try and just respond by saying that I agree that there's a history of institutional racism in the Portland Police Bureau, and there are very legitimate concerns being raised that I agree with, that while we're concerned about the white supremacist hate on the rise, there's also institutional violence that's been meted out, particularly around the black community in Portland, by the police in terms of lethal violence used against black people in the city. And these are all connected. And the task in terms of turning a police department around is monumental.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I appreciate you taking my word cloud and turning it into something like a question. You do that well. Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, a pleasure to visit with you once again. And sorry it's under these circumstances, but thanks for visiting with us on The Exchange again.
Thank you for having me.